الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى My respected brothers and elders Abdullah ibn Abbas radiyallahu anhu was taking a farz ghusl And his student, perhaps it was Masruq, was helping him out. Now the question that will come to most minds, how was this possible? For those that have lived in India, it's not difficult for them to understand how it happens. We used to see it daily. He wants to take a ghusl, so he wears a lungi, nice lungi, and then he makes a ghusl. Obviously before that, if he needs to clean the unclean areas, he would have done that in the toilet. Now all the waste, all the dirt is gone. What is left is to make the ghusl. So now, he's doing the ghusl and his student is supporting him. So he asks his student, and how many times did I wash my hands? Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhu, the dear cousin of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for whom Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had made a lot of dua. So the student says to Ibn Abbas that, I don't know, ma'adri. Ibn Abbas is very, very disappointed. وَمَا مَنَعَكَ أَنْ لَا تَدْرِي لَا أَبَنْ لَكَ What's wrong with you? Why don't you know what? How many times I washed my hand? So what Ibn Abbas is getting across to his student, that you're not only for the khidmat, but you must also observe what your ustad is doing. Sometimes people feel that I'm doing the khidmat, that's enough. Why I did the khidmat? So with the khidmat, you need to observe what your elder is doing. Because you're going to be with your elder for a short period, you'll move your way, he'll move his way, and you're not going to be observing, then obviously you will lose out. And knowledge, the second lesson is, knowledge is not only verbal, but it's also practical. So, if it is important to acquire the ilm, verbally, audio-visual, it's also important equally to see the application. Number three, it's also important that the elder is doing it right. If the student wants to learn and he sees his teacher doing something wrong, then as though the teacher is conveying a message that you only do what I say, don't do what I do. And Islam is teaching you that you must do what I do and you must do what I tell you to do. Both. Now that lesson is complete, is perfect. And if it is just the verbal, not supported by the application, then it is deficient. In the month of Rajab, we hear the bayans of Mi'raj, don't we? 27th of Rajab, and that's the Mi'raj. And then we hear it repeatedly that the gift that Rasulullah brought from the heavens was the gift of namaz. But seldom do we hear that the following day Hazrat Jibreel Islam came in person and ammani Jibreel in the bayt. Jibreel Islam led the prayer, led the salah at the Kaaba Sharif. So one is he's got the prayer, he's got the salah, and one is practically done before Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So if there was a need to practically demonstrate it for Rasul Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, I don't think any of us can say that we don't need it. Jibreel alayhi salam had to come from the seven heavens to practically demonstrate it to Rasul Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, now this ta'aleem and this instruction is complete. Otherwise, the instruction is incomplete. Then, this was not just with namaz. In wuzu, there are seven sahaba ikram, Usman radiallahu anhu, Ali radiallahu anhu, Muawiyah radiallahu anhu, Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhu, Miqdad radiallahu anhu, and two other sahaba ikram. All of them are demonstrating the wuzu practically before the students. Ala urikum wudu a Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. I shall show you the wuzu of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So, we know of the first, قُمْتُمْ إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ فَخْسِلُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ. What is the procedure? But then, it is practically demonstrated. Do as you see me doing it. So, Nabi Sam in the Hajj also said, لَعَلِّي لَا أَرَاكُمْ بَعْدَ عَامِ هَذَا خُذُوا عَنِّي مَنَاسِكَكُمْ. Then maybe you don't see me the next year. So, you better see that you take everything from me and take it complete. Hajj, you see and you observe. Namaz, صَلُّوا كَمَا رَأَيْتُمُونِي أُصَلِّي. That namaz, you will take it from me. كَمَا رَأَيْتُمُونِي أُصَلِّي. How I do the namaz, you will take it from me. So one is the book knowledge and one is the practically demonstrated knowledge, and both are required. Just taking one, the book knowledge, and sufficing on that, it is insufficient. I was asking one doctor friend, you know, okay, how your course runs. So he says about three and a half years or something, it's all book work, theory, academic, hard studying. And after that, most of it is applying ourselves. They send you to this hospital and that clinic, and here, go and work here. So whatever book knowledge you've acquired, now go and apply it. Now the doctor or the instructor feels quite comfortable that he's got the theoretical and he's got the application. Otherwise, he just showed him how to administer the injection, but he's not done it practically. He can make a mistake. He may give the wrong injection, or he may not administer it correctly and can be fatal. So these mistakes can happen. So they want the trainee doctor get the book knowledge and get the practical side of it. Now the knowledge is complete. As Imam Shafi rahmatullah alayhi is cleaning his underarms, hair from the underarm, as we know, it's all sunnah. The mustache, the pubic hair, the fingernails, toenails, and then the underarm as well, to clean this, preferably once in a week or once in 2 weeks, but to get this clean all the time. So the word that is used for the underarms in the hadith is nithful ibit, is to pluck out that hair under the arm. Imam Shafi rahmatullah is doing this, and his student is observing him. And his student is watching that my ustad, Imam Shafi rahmatullah, is not plucking out the hair, but he's shaving off the hair. So he's looking at the ustad now. Arre, ustad sahab, kya ho raha? You're teaching me one thing, and there's something else going on here. So you see, there's such a beautiful interaction in the Islamic procedure of education. There's such a beautiful interaction that the student must observe, and he's required to ask as well. If he sees some inconsistency, he must ask. And the ustad must see that I'm doing it correctly as well. And the same will apply to every Muslim home. If the father learnt it properly, there's some reliable person in your masjid, a nice alim, he knows it very well. So you did it, and you did it before him. You carried out the salah or the wuzu before him. Nowadays, we have got an imamat class, right? So the imamat class is for new Muslims. So we have to show them how to do the toilet as well. Now again, you'll think, how? How can you show that? So it's not a difficult thing. So the one that is instructing them, he'll put on a double pant. And then he'll show how you undress in the toilet, right? And then you must guide your urine into the pan. Now I say, oh, it's so easy. Hey, we thought it's such a difficult thing now, sitting in the pan and doing all these things here. We thought it was so difficult, but when you showed it to us, now we can do it as well. So simple. Okay. So it's a little bit of adjustment, little bit of simplicity, modesty, and we can get the actual sunnah done. But how much do we observe? How much do we take? We'll come back to this, the same topic, inshallah. I'll just digress a little bit and I'll come back. It's my style. I digress, come back, digress, come back. So there was a group of ulama that came in the morning from Zambia, spending 1 year, so they wanted some advice. So I explained to them, see, everything has got certain prerequisites. So the prerequisite is before the act, and then you've got obligations within the act. So before the act, there are some prerequisites, and within the act, there is also obligations. Namaz has got a precondition. Face the direction of the Qibla. Now the person is doing namaz with a lot of attention, a lot of humility, a lot of respect is doing it. But he's doing namaz in the opposite direction. What do you say? Namaz is valid or not valid? Why? Precondition. So his sincerity, we don't discredit him for the sincerity, for the devotion, for everything else. But the fact that he's facing in the opposite direction, he's not conformed with one of the pre-requirements of namaz. So he hasn't conformed, so namaz is invalid. So there are those acts that are requirements, conditions, and the conditions have to be conformed to. Like, person is doing a namaz, but he didn't take wuzu. Will that namaz be valid? You know, namaz is not valid. With all the sincerity that you have, and all the baths that you have taken, and all the goodness and the purity of your clothing, but you haven't done wuzu before you stepped onto the musalla, your namaz is invalid. Right? Your clothing has to be pak, your body has to be pak, facing the qibla. Now you're in a position, and the place that you are performing the namaz, that has to be pak as well. Now you're in a position to do the namaz. But you haven't conformed to all these preconditions, and you want to get into the namaz, then the namaz is invalid. So similarly, then the namaz has got certain conditions for it to be valid. So some obligations within the namaz. He did the namaz, but there was no recitation of Quran Sharif at all, or Surah Fatiha, nothing, absolutely nothing. Will the namaz be valid? Say no. Why? Because the recitation is an obligation. No recitation, then the obligation has been left out. It's incomplete. Namaz is not right. You can't even complete it after that with the sajda isahu. Because it was faraz. Recitation of the Quran Sharif was faraz. And you left out this faraz completely, so the namaz is invalid. Or he performed the namaz, but he didn't do the sajda. What will you say? Namaz is not valid. Why is not valid? Because one of the obligations of namaz within the namaz was left out, so the namaz is invalid. Now the person has done all the preconditions and the obligations within namaz, so you go to a mufti sahab, it's, you know, that namaz is valid. So one is the validity of the namaz and one is the acceptance of the namaz. They are two different things. Sometimes we think that the namaz is valid, so hence it must be accepted. So one is the validity and one is the acceptance. The validity has got different conditions and the acceptance has got a different condition. And now it's so important to understand both, right? Understand what invalidates a namaz and understand also what are the pre-requirements for the acceptance of that namaz. Otherwise, someone is saying, I'm doing my namaz, But the namaz says, "Inna salata tanha anil fahsha'i wal munkar." What does the Quran Sharif say? The Quran Sharif says that it's a guarantee that namaz will stop you from any type of indecent behavior and from wrong behavior. I'm reading namaz so long, for so many years, but I'm still watching things that I'm not supposed to be watching. And my eyes are betraying me. I'm not behaving right. I'm going into gatherings that I'm not supposed to be going, right? Or I'm listening to things that I'm not supposed to be listening. Music, or ghibat, or backbiting, whatever it is. But I'm talking, or I'm listening to these type of things. But now, on the one end, namaz says that I will stop you, I'm guaranteed, I will stop you from any type of indecent activity, and I will stop you from wrong. But then I'm still involved, and sometimes it becomes so terrible that right, sitting in the masjid, and there's a ringtone, but the ringtone has got a musical ringtone. Now, on the one end, Rasulullah is saying, I've come to smash down all musical instruments, everything, all musical instruments have come to smash down. And here we'll sit in the masjid, stand in the masjid, and then we've got that thing going on, the ringing tone going on, right? And we don't even bat an eye, don't even think that we're doing a wrong. So isn't that a compounded wrong? We're doing a wrong, but we don't even consider it to be a wrong. It doesn't even cross the mind that I'm doing something wrong. But it's music, pure music, you can hear it's music. The tone, if there's not words, the instrument is there, something of music is there. Here, imagine Rasulullah is sitting on the mimbar and saying, I come down to smash down, to break down all musical instrument. And what we are saying with the phone, Ya Rasulullah, I'll show you, I'll do it. Isn't that an open defiance? He's saying, I came down to smash, to break this. And what we are saying, no, I will make sure that I will do it. See, so namaz has got a certain prerequisite, namaz has got certain conditions within it, and then that's the acceptance or the validity of the namaz. And then there's a second perspective to the namaz, and that is the acceptance of the namaz. So the acceptance of the namaz is something totally different, right? And that is coming in the verse of the Quran, وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ خَاشِعُونَ. The validity of the namaz requires that there must be khushu. لا صلاة إلا بخشوع القلب. There must be that khushu in your heart for your namaz to gain acceptance. Yes, it's valid. You've been absolved of your farz. But now ask whether this namaz has reached the threshold of Allah Ta'ala or not. Has reached Allah Ta'ala or not. So, as he says, sometimes you perform the namaz, you absorb of your obligation, but that namaz is flung back onto you like a dirty rag. Now, how much you have put into the namaz, and then this is the response, this is the reward. So, what was the missing ingredient? There must be some missing ingredient for your namaz to be thrown back at you like a dirty rag. The missing ingredient is this khushu. Now, what is this khushu all about? See, so namaz has got the effect. You do it properly, it will stop you from indecent behavior. You do it correctly, it will stop you from the wrong. But if it's not stopping you from the wrong and indecent behavior, that means there's something seriously wrong in your namaz. Have you taken all the time and the pains to correct and rectify the namaz? Now, I'm thinking, I'm doing all namaz, long rakats I'm doing, seeing this, he must be reaching Allah Ta'ala. But now, there is a missing ingredient. If this ingredient was there, then why am I behaving in this manner? You get a complaint, person sitting right in the first surf, but he's watching. The Imam Sahib is behind him. Imam Sahib says, I was just getting up, and accidentally, I just happened to look at his phone, and he was somewhere else. Totally haram is looking. Right in the masjid, right in the first surf, with a beard and kurta, but he's watching this thing here, and he doesn't even bat an eye, he doesn't think that what I'm doing is wrong. See? So, Shaitan has got you such that you can be within the masjid, within the parameters of the masjid, but you're totally off, absolutely off. And يَزُنُّونَ, they, you think, يُحْسَبُونَ أَنَّهُمْ يُحْسِنُونَ سُنَّةً, وَيَحْسَبُونَ أَنَّهُمْ يُحْسِنُونَ صُنْعًا ضَلَّ سَعْيُمْ. When you're doing it with that frame of mind, without the consciousness of haram, right, then ضَلَّ سَعْيُمْ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, all your efforts have been wasted. وَهُمْ يَحْسَبُونَ أَنَّهُمْ يُحْسِنُونَ صُنْعًا. But you think that everything is right. Yeah, the Surah Kahf and the last Surah, the last ayats. ضَلَّ سَعْيُمْ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. Your efforts are getting wasted. But within your mind, you feel, I'm on board. See, I'm doing the right thing. See? Now there's total diversity. Namaz is saying something else, and you saying something else. Your behavior is something else. I said, I don't know what to do. Imam Sahib is telling me now, I don't know what to do. He's in the first serve, but he's sitting there. Now, when a person has got the phone, then you feel perhaps he's reciting some Quran Sharif, or there's some message of a hadith, so perhaps he's going through that. But the answer said, I just got up, and mistakenly my eyes just went on, I saw, hey, he's doing totally haram here. He's sitting on that, and he's so glued to it that he can't see right, he can't see left, he's just in that. One person came in, some times back. So he says, Mulana, make dua for me. Gee. So he says, I was involved in drugs. Now I made a lot of money, too much of money I made. But I was involved in drugs, rock cocaine and all these funny names. I was involved on that. Then I made a lot of money. Too much of money, smelling rich now. But now I got involved in a drug that is a million times worse. Now I'm thinking to myself now, can there be anything worse than this? When Mawlana Mutara from Newlands, he gives a drug talk, hey, what a terrible thing. But now, this man is telling me that he's a million times worse. So I was very anxious to know what it is on the phone. He says, every perceivable wrong, this gadget has got it. And you're doing it with such innocence of the mind. I'm totally innocent. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not robbing. But you are definitely robbing yourself. You're cheating yourself. It's a misunderstanding. One Persian, I'll come back to this, right? One Persian poet, he heard about a poetry of an Indian poet. Too good. The Nazam is, he's reciting, it's too good, man. It's too good. So, he said, hey man, this person's ish for Rasulullah Pasam must be too much. And ishq is required. The words of Quran Sharif for ishq is, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَشَدُّ حُبَّا لِلَّهِ. One is love, and one is أَشَدُّ حُبَّا, in other words, intense love. That intense love is called ishq, right? That's ishq, intense love. So the Muslim's love for Allah Ta'ala is intense. It's not just a mild one. It's intense. And why is that intense love required? That intense love is required that if there is a clash, your dini interests and your worldly interests, Allah Ta'ala comes first. And these things come on all the time. This country, everything is going wrong. The roads are not right. Security is not right. Electric, everything is going. Let us move on. Nobody says it's haram to move on. But before making that step, we need to see that is our deen secure in that part of the world. Going to another part of the world, and in that part of the world, is the deen secure or not? You may get the dunya, and you may get the health. You're very health conscious. You live up 99, 100, 200, right? So you're very health conscious. You got all the security, nothing to be afraid about. But in the process, if your deen is going, then one doctor just came back from Ireland. Just give me a report. So he said, I went there, and most of the people that have come in there, all overseas, South Africa, other countries, they've come in, all most professional people. So he's giving me a report. One man is crying before this doctor. He says, see, my child, 7-8 years of age, so she went to school. And she was grieved about something. So her Irish friend, she's also about 8-9 years of age, she asked, what happened? You're grieving, you're a little bit sad today, what happened? So this one says to that one, to that Irish one, okay, my mother shouted me. So this Irish girl, when mentioned this to her mother, okay, you know, this girl here, this Muslim girl here, her mother shouted her. In one day's time, the police were there to uplift all the five children, put them into a home. They got absolutely no contact with the children. You can't get them, you can't get hold of them, you can't talk to them, absolutely no contact. You don't know how to take care of children, so we will take care. Now, they are at home, and they're feeding the child with swine, so what will come? Think to yourself, what will come? What will be, in few years, what will come? You will absolutely no contact with your children. Five children, the apple of your eyes. And so, you know, we think that people here are hooligans. They are monsters there. Because the most they have done here, they may hurt your property or they may hurt you. But they're going to damage your iman. So I say, is it worth the price? Yeah, if you died in the process, most will happen that you'll become shaheed. Anything more than that. You're not making jihad. So Allah Pak is getting the shaheed in a different way. Before they were going and making jihad, etc. in the Sahaba Ikram's time, Tabi'in time. Now, they're not making jihad. So Allah Ta'ala has to fill a quota of shaheeds. So one way or the other, you're getting shaheed. So is there anything to cry about? Yes, we feel hurt about what happened. But at the end of the day, the man became shaheed. Khalas. But going on that side of the world, compromising your deen, and then after that your children are lost, absolutely lost. Yeah, I say, is it worth the while? Was it worth the price? The price that you paid for. You're making a lot of money. But was it worth the price? So, in all matters that we do, we give deen the preference. So one alim was there today. So he's asking me, where you got this from? That must give deen the preference. So I told him, see, everything must give you, kitab se must give you. Must give you the reference, everything. Trust me for a moment. So now he must give me. So alright. Say, تُنْكَحُ الْمَرْأَةُ لِأَرْبَعِينَ لِجَمَالِهَا وَلِمَالِهَا وَلِحَسَبِهَا وَلِدِينِهَا. When you're proposing for a girl, then you look at four things. Beauty, wealth, status, and deen. But what the hadith is saying, you prefer the aspect of deen. So in all that, right, beauty, everything must tag along. But see, ke bhai, ye deendar bhi hai, uske andar deen hai ya nahi? The woman that you're proposing for, right, she's beautiful, she got the looks, she got the height, she got the birth, everything. But ye dekho, ke uske andar deen bhi hai nahi? Has she got the deen? If she's got the deen, then she will give deen to your children. And she hasn't got the deen, then she will show the importance of materialism to your children. So your children will grow up, and how they grow up with materialistic minds. When they grow up with materialistic minds, how will they think? They will think like this, that anything comes on the way of materialism, we just smash it down. You get one, two, that's an exception to the rule. But otherwise, anything comes on the way of deen, on the way of material progress, just throw it away, just push it away. One person was there, the madrasa says, Hindu person, right? Now, the whole worship is money. Anything I can get a luck. If I hear the azan, I get luck. Luck means I get money. Right? So anything but money. One person came and said, no, he's Hindu, but reading Durood Sharif. You know, I get a lot of luck for that. So everything that they do is just for luck. Just for some additional thing. So he says, he tells me, the mother-in-law is sick, you know, she's paralyzed or something. And now the sisters and all that have to take turns to look after their mother. So he says, now, when it's their turn to look after, they're actually telling the mother, hey, you know, why don't you die, man? Why don't you die? See, all our weekends, everything getting ruined. Everything getting spoiled. We can't enjoy a decent weekend. Our holidays, we can't do it. We must die now quickly. You see, so when you going to worship materialism, at the end that thing will give you a kick, then your eyes open, oh man, I invested all in this, now I understand what it's return, what's the return. Man passed away on this Friday, right? Now when children have taken a different line, or a man was still pious, but he couldn't control his children for whatever reason. Now they're making the ghusl of the man, and the son is saying in relief, at last my father died, man. Now this Friday, but you see, when you only guided materials, circular, Westernism, then this is the brain, this is the type of thinking that you have brought for yourself, this is the monster that you have built up. Now these are all happening before us. These are not stories, first-hand reports I'm getting. Sometimes the person directly involved, he's talking about it, sometimes the second source, but they are showing what's going on. So, in anything you are doing, then give the deen the preference. Leave everything else. What does Allah, Allah Pak wants? What Rasul Pak wants? See, people are thinking has gone all in different directions. Again, we'll have to refer to the way of the Sahaba, to the way of Rasul Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because he's given us direction for every facet of life. There wasn't a facet of life that he did not complete us. He complete, perfected us in every facet. Every dimension of life, he's given a complete code. Hazrat Irbad ibn Sariya, radiallahu anhu, I'll come back to this sports story, right? Or no? Just give me a chance. In a masjid, I like to talk a little bit free, right? The Juma talk, 20 minutes, just on one topic, from the beginning till the end. And here, it's not a Juma talk, this is a dispensary, right? He needs an Aspro, he needs Dispirin, he needs Panado, he needs an injection, he needs a tonic, so different people have got different needs, and according to the needs, may Allah Ta'ala inspire our minds, and pass, let you enjoy, right? On the table also, everybody doesn't want everything, only Jardo all the time. Jardo, then Dar, then some Ashar, then Gajar Binis, all different things, and you get a fulfillment. Then after that, with some coke, whatever else you need. So this is like a majlis. So your needs, right? Understand what your needs are, and your needs have to be delivered. Right. So this Irbad ibn Sariya, radiallahu anhu, he hears the sermon of Rasul Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He is that sahabi in the expedition of Tabuk. 30,000 sahaba ikram already, all prepared. And why mustn't they be? Rasulullah made a public announcement, all sahaba ikram. Rasulullah is leaving, we'll have to be. Now imagine, like approximately the whole Medina is around, right? Rasulullah is in the midst. And then Jibreel Islam is coming and guiding. So the heavens are with them, Rasulullah is with them. Sahaba ikram, cream, more than cream, all around. And this Irbad comes in. A lot of the Sahaba ikram don't have the means for transport. So when they don't have the means of the transport, so others are offering. So it's his mount, right? And I don't have a conveyance. So he will ride for 5 kilometers, but he'll make sure that I also ride for the equal amount. And if there's three people sharing, then each person is taking that amount. Not that it's my mount, so I have an additional right now. Exact. He comes up, no mount, I don't have a vehicle. And Rasulullah is telling them, La ajidu ma ahmilukum alayh. I don't have the mount to provide you. Now they're coming with such aspiration, hey, we must go. I ask you, what would be your heart if Rasulullah was here and all are moving, everybody's moving behind him, with him. Jibreel Islam is coming, right? Then won't your heart, what will happen to your heart? Can you resist that? So Allah Ta'ala speaks about the truth of this Irbad, radiyallahu anhu, comes here, La ajidu ma ahmilukum ali, I don't have the mount to provide for you. So the Quran Sharif captures the whole picture and gives him such a high applaud. تَوَلَّوْ وَأَعْيُنُهُمْ تَفِيدُ مِنَ الدَّمْعِ حَزَنًا Allah يَجِدُ مَا يُنْفِقُونَ They moved away with tears streaming down. A sign of acceptance, right? Because Allah Ta'ala seen the whole side. He's seen the side. He knows exactly what's going in their hearts. So it's a very difficult scene. Sometimes I think, imagine a 9-10 year old child, right? A deep affinity with the father, so deep with his parents. Every move, he and his parents, right? and the parents have to leave for Hajj. So when they are meeting for the last time at the Shaka airport, what happens to the child? He says, Sab Madine ko gaye, hum reh gaye. Then he cried at that time. So now that's Irbad al-Nasariya, the affinity, the love, the muhabbat that he's got. Now Rasulullah is delivering a sermon, and this Irbad is, he's the reporter of the hadith. And he says to Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, كَأَنَّهَا مَوْعِزَةُ مُوَدِّعٍ فَعِزْنَا. Ya Rasulullah, this is like a sermon delivered by a person that is taking a leave, is moving away for good. He's going to move away for good now, so some parting advice. You know, that's the most important, the gist of your whole mission. Give it to us now, you know, what we must do. Because if you're leaving now, we need to hold on to something. We need to hold on to something so that we are safe for the rest of our lives. We know that you are the life. And we need to hold on to your teaching to be alive and to reach to the right. We'll need to hold on to something, otherwise we're lost. So what should we hold on to? So Rasulullah shows them about two, three important things in this message. مَنْ يَعِشْ مِنْكُمْ بَعْدِي فَسَيَرَى إِخْتِلَافًا كَثِيرًا. Right. After me, you will find a lot of differences, a lot of discrepancies. The light of Nubuwwat is the strongest and the best in his era. The light is there, so everything is bright, nothing is ambiguous, the picture is absolutely clear. Any ambiguity, full light you can see, full light. So there's nothing that is ambiguous, is absolutely clear. So they got the full picture, they captured the whole thing. Nothing ambiguous. But as you move away in time, so is the picture so clear now? Now it becomes cloudy, musty, right? Frost. So the picture is not so clear as it was in his day. Now when the picture is not so clear, so there are going to be differences. One will say this, one will say something else. See? Why? Because in that day, the picture was absolutely clear. There was no need for any difference. But as you moved on in time, then the picture became a little bit misty, cloudy, frosty. Now you don't have that sight and vision that you had initially. But then the message of Rasulullah is totally clear. You know, that's the comprehensive nature of the teaching of Rasulullah, be it the day of the Sahaba or be it a million years from now, his teaching is always perfect. He'll show you an exit and a solution for any circumstance. In the Tabligh Jamaat, they say halat. Halat means circumstance. Before I should think, what is halat? So you take your time after you understand it. There are some terms that they use, and this is what they refer to. So now, you're coming across this type of a situation, you're moving away in time. So the picture is becoming a little bit dusty, cloudy, right? And can be dangerous. You just accelerate. You can be on the edge of the cliff, and then what happens? Then you're gone. It's so musty. But in this mist now, what are you supposed to be doing? What is the lifeline? Which line can you hold on to that you can protect your life, your deen, and what must you do? Must you go and live in Australia? Yeah, they're making mega bucks. If you hear them, it's so much they're making. But in the whole process, he's lost his one child. He took him to, the wife went away to Australia, so she went to study, and after she studied, he made millions, and she asked for a divorce, and all his money is taken away. See, the dunya gives you a kick. At the end, it gives you a kick. Because everybody's fight is just money. Everything else, all other values are just collapsed, then it's just money. So Rasulullah is giving, alright, what is the solution? In this whole commotion, now what must you do? So you're going to see these differences, these discrepancies you're going to see. So alaykum bi sunnati wa sunnati al-khulafai rashidin al-mahdiin min ba'di. So differences you'll get of two classes, right? Difference is, one is, it was always accepted by all senior ulama, those that had passed on, all senior on, senior experience, no commercial interest they've got, but all of them held on to that. So one is that type of a difference, there you can go with it. Whichever way you go on, you will be right. Now the difference, like, for example, you going to the Haram Sharif, right? And the Asr Namaz is read about an hour, 1.5 hour before a Hanafi time. But every senior ulama will tell you, you perform your Namaz with the Jamaat in the Haram Sharif. Although it is before the time that is set, before the Hanafi time setting. But every senior ulama will tell you, go and perform your Namaz in the Haram Sharif, don't deprive yourself of the sawab being multiplied 100,000 times, right? So any ulama will tell you the same. Or for example, it's medication, right? And at least 70-80% of the medication has got some alcohol or something haram it's got, right? So they will all tell you that, alright, you can take the medication if there's no substitute, no equivalent substitute you can take, but proportionate to what you definitely need. Don't overdo it and don't become dependent. Proportionate to what you need, you take. So any alim will tell you the same thing, right? So now this is the past. So there's no differences, any school of thought, all will say the same. Perform your Namaz in the Haram Sharif. Right? And now you get so many more differences coming up now, right? Now, in the face of these differences, what are you supposed to be doing? Are you supposed to be just speculating and guessing? Or are you looking for an escape route, you know? Well, there's a difference of opinion, so are you supposed to be doing that? Then that's speculation, that's guesswork. And Allah doesn't want you to do guesswork. The Quran says it very, very clear. That يَتَّبِعُونَ إِلَّا الظَّنِّ. They are just following conjecture. They are following guesswork and speculation. So you don't come under the category of these kuffars. They're also going behind just guesswork, speculation, etc. You look for something concrete, something sound. Like I say, you're driving at 200 at the edge of a cliff. Because it's misty now, you're driving. You take a guess, so now that person is driving like that also. What happens the next moment? What happens? So you must look for your safety. And I say the teaching of Rasulullah was perfect, complete, comprehensive. For every circumstance, he showed you a way out. So what's the way out here now? Now you follow the way of the Khulafa'i Rashideen. Abu Bakr, Umar, Usman, Ali radiallahu anhu. And they were like mountains, not wavering, not having a gentle approach. No, say, no, have a gentle, all people like this type of talk. Gentle, he is very tender. And what he is saying, what the Muslim is saying, you just hold on to firmly. Alaykum, alaykum comes for luzum. It's not a choice, you just hold on to it firmly. If they saying 20 rakats of tarawih, you do it. Then don't go 10 and all that, right? You hold on to them, you'll be safe. Now look at it again after that, right? Rasulullah person, Azan. How many minutes was it? 7 minutes. As Rasulullah has left the world, right? Now, as Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu has come to guide the Ummah. He's the deputy, Rasulullah person, most trusted and loved person. Trusted, loved person, and by name he says, follow this man after me, this man and Umar, follow. So he's given the name. Now, at that moment now, there was some chaos at that time. And people refused to give out the zakat. So some people refused to give out zakat because they felt the obligation of zakat was just confined to the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they had a verse of the Quran, "Khuz min amwalihim." That, "Ya Rasulullah, you accept and receive their zakat." Now you wonder now, because you are thinking of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam as a small zakat body. No, it's not like that. He's managing the whole Islamic state, and there's millions of cases coming all the time, and he has to manage all of them. So there need to be one single point of distribution. Otherwise, we'll put 100 million here, and where it's needed, we're not putting anything. So if the administration is right, the road is right, the security is right, the hospital is right, the every other service is right, water is right, electricity is right. But the administration is not right, then security, lights, water, hospital, road, everything goes. So the admin needs to be right. So the admin has to be controlled. So he has to receive it and then distribute it accordingly. So one group felt it was just for that period. Other group said, no. Rasulullah used to distribute. We can also distribute the zakat in our own areas. So Abu Bakr was the man of the time, man of the moment, he was the man. So he says, no, lo mana'uni aqalan. If they refuse to give me just one rope only, laqataltumuhum, I'll fight against them. Laqataltumuhum, I'll fight against them. Just one rope, I'll bring them exactly to that path. Now, if you show a person, you know, studying deen himself, you teach him hadith, but you know, it's not a gentle approach. Where's the softness? Where's the kindness? So as though today you came to teach Abu Bakr deen. Abu Bakr didn't understand. The Sahaba Kiram in that day, they didn't understand. And today this chacha came up, he understood the deen better than Abu Bakr radiyallahu anhu. That's what you are alluding towards. Abu Bakr is very strong on this. Very strong, he didn't give up. And now imagine at that moment, none of the Sahaba Kiram were in agreement that this type of stance must be taken, this approach must be taken. Abu Bakr is all alone. In fact, a person like Umar radiallahu anhu is initially not in agreement. Abu Bakr punches him on the chest, says, Jabbarun fil jahiliya, khawarun fil Islam. That in the days of ignorance, he was such a tough and a strong man. Now in Islam, you become such a weakling. What's wrong with you? See the stance that is taken. Now you think to yourself, was it a gentle approach? Let the woman also come to the masjid. You know, children also must come. It's like an entertainment center. That was that the approach. I said, no, you'll go by this. Now, the whole Sahaba, all the Sahaba Ikram are not with him, not on the same page. And he says, he goes on to say, if none of you join me, I'll go and fight this battle alone. Because when I was in the cave, I was the only person with the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And Allah Pak ensured, Inna Allaha Ma'ana, Allah Pak is with us. So I got the support of Allah Ta'ala, I don't need you. Straight. One man is holding the fort. Until now, Umar and the rest of the Sahaba Ikram, we understood now, this man understood it. We were wrong, and he understood it, right? And we all joined up, because our hearts opened out now. It was not coercion, it was not force. Then at last they say, Shim Sayfak, wala tufji'na bi firaqik. Abu Bakr, return the sword back to the scabbard. Don't ever disappoint us with you separating. Now imagine if Abu Bakr wasn't strong at that time. What would have happened to the rest of the Ummah after that? Then it wouldn't be surprising that he's going to the church, he's going to the temple, he's going to the mandir, he's going busting coconuts there. See? Like how everybody is doing. When you see a politician or non-Muslims, it's an examination time, they're going to Bashapir, do something there, something will work out there. Huh? Don't you see that? You hear about it all the time. Everything works. So there has to be a person like Abu Bakr by remain firm. So that's why I say, now I have to say it openly. Before I have to say it in riddles, and now I have to say it openly, that consider the Majlis on Amr Sadiq as a blessing. Because he's holding, and he's holding very firmly. Whoever, it can be family, no family, friend, no friend. But he can say it as it were. There is that group of the Ummah that want to see Islam in its pure form. And there are those that want to see in a diluted form. Let it be. You want to go to Jahannam, diluted form, you have it. Then you face the consequence afterwards. But you want to see purity, you want to live a life of a pure Muslim, then there is a way out there. When there is a way out there, then just hold on to Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr is such a personality that you hear every Jummah, Arhamu ummati bi ummati Abu Bakr, the most kind towards my ummat. So you can't talk of gentleness. There isn't a person as kind like him. But when he has to take a stance for deen, then he can smash up Umar also on the chest. It was so hard, so rigid, but he could smash him as well. But you see that firmness on deen. So this rigid and this tender kindness, etc., is misconstrued. I ask you, if someone is coming and robbing your house, right? You're going to be saying, I'll be very tender, kind. Yeah? You know, Islam, Muslims are very tender and kind people. They're very gentle people. Tomorrow the person comes and rapes your wife and her daughter. You know, Islam is very tender. Yeah, when they're raping Islam, you must be tender and kind. But when they rape your daughter, then you have to make a noise. So I ask you, there's no consistent pattern here. When wrong, Islam is being disfigured. Nobody bats an eye. Photography, mixed gatherings, everything and anything. Anything and everything. One man, a Muslim, is telling me, what point I must be tolerant? Now I'm going to a wedding, there's photography, there's music, there's mixed gathering. And now this woman scantily danced, scantily dressed, and they're dancing. Front of all the audience, they're doing it. So at which point now must I say no is no? Because first I gave it to photographer, now he's seeing this. Then I gave it to music, someone else said something else. Then I went into that mixed gathering. But now this music, these women scantily dressed and they are dancing to the crowd, and must I carry on to being tolerant? You see the confusion it brings. So just go back to the original. Abu Bakr held that stance firm, strong. He didn't turn away. Because of the barakah of this man here, today we can see some level of purity. And had he been soft at that moment, what would have happened? Allah Akbar.